Hello, everyone, and welcome to That Comedy Podcast. It's the third episode. You've stuck around. This is so great that you're back. I mean, I can't even... Ah, you're a dedicated fan base. It's so great. Speaking of dedicated fan bases, I've got Tom McLean with me for this episode. He is a comedian. He's a game designer. He's very, very funny, and he's a good friend of mine. How you doing? I love you, man.
I'm doing pretty well.
It's good. Are we friends? I feel like I could...
What kind of question is that?
I don't know. I'm just... I have a long history
I feel like if you ask, are we friends?
Yeah.
One party involved is going to get offended.
Yeah.
Like, if you are... Oh. That's a nasty question.
Yeah,
and if
exactly.
you're not, well, you're in for a world of hurt.
Yeah, exactly. I've had growing up, I just didn't have solid friends because I would just jump around from group to group, and like, I haven't had the best friends in general. It wasn't until like university that I knew what a friend really was.
Wow.
Sorry. That's it's so
welcome
true.
To That Comedy Podcast.
Welcome to That Comedy Podcast,
from
guys.
The depths of sadness.
The nature
Harrison
of the
Engstrom.
The nature of the podcast is I'm Harrison Engstrom. And I'm an amateur comedian in Melbourne. I've been doing it for 4 months as of next week. And you get to listen to me talk to people who are funnier, much more enjoyable, much more cooler, and much more... who've been doing comedy longer. I was going to say much more time. That doesn't make any sense.
This is the most humbling intro. You need to work
it's
on
fine.
Your...
It's fine.
You need to work on your pizzazz.
No, it's...
Hi, everyone.
What's
the
pizzazz?
It's me, the person you're here for, Harrison Engstrom, and some boring guy on the other side of the table.
Well, I feel like that's what I... That's... I could never do... I mean, I'm assuming you're aware of Mark Maron's podcast, W2F.
Oh, yes.
And, like, I never wanted to have a podcast where I had intros where it was just me. Because I feel like I don't have any fan base whatsoever. I have nobody who... likes and enjoys me enough to listen to me for like 10 to 20 minutes, let alone a full hour. So if I just go right into the interview, it's great.
Yeah, no, that's the way to go. You don't want to go too long by yourself anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you've got your poor old guest in the room.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got to just sit and nod and give little silent chuckles at every joke that you make. You don't even need to do that. That's actually a podcast industry tip.
Wait, what?
Is just unmic your guest and then they can laugh as loud as they want. To all of your monologues.
That's what I always imagined. For some reason, I didn't understand podcasts when I first started listening to them, because WTF was one of the first I ever listened to. So when he would just go in those long, long intros, I would just imagine in my head, like if I knew the guest, that it was just sitting there really silent. I'm like, wow, Donald Glover has a lot of patience to listen to him rant about his ex-wife.
Well, they genuinely
long time.
Do. Like, sometimes it's not record the monologue and then the guest arrives and you do the two-hander.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, have you seen, you know, Comedy Bang Bang?
Yes.
The video podcasts that they do sometimes will have just, like, the new guest comedian who's planned to come in a third of the way through. He's just, like, sitting there with a grin on his face for, like, yeah, 20 minutes.
Oh, man.
It's awesome.
I've only seen the live episodes, like, from South by Southwest or...
No, you've got to check out the vid. This is...
Tom
and Harrison recommend other podcasts.
It's great, guys. You should really listen to Doug Loves Movies and Justin Hamilton's Can You Take This Photo, Please? It's really, really good. They are really good. I'm sorry, that's my... I'm a dumb
Everybody's got to listen
voice.
To Dan Carlin's Hardcore History.
Oh.
Not funny at all,
oh.
But amazing.
Well, you were suggesting we were... Oh, fuck, this has turned into a weird reality now. You were suggesting on the weekend there's a podcast called Sleep With Me, where a guy...
He's the best.
Guy starts
so
out...
Weird.
A guy starts out just sort of telling stories, and it's meant to lull you into sleep.
He's amazing. He does, like, almost ASMR stuff. Like, it's not just he tells stories that sort of meander as they go along and then fall asleep. Like, he opens it up with, like, hey there, how's it going? He's struggling to get to sleep? Well, I'm here to help you out. Just imagine me as, like, your friend.
Oh.
I'm just sitting by your bed, and I'm just talking to you. But you don't have to listen. It's fine. Like, he's the most, like, calming and
it's
welcoming
It's so genius, though.
Presence. Oh,
like,
really
I downloaded
lovely.
The first two episodes, because I have trouble sleeping in general. I usually listen to music, and because I don't have Wi-Fi in my place, I won't have it till January, I just basically just have a whole bunch of, like, Groove Armada and Café Del Mar and stuff that I just listen to. So this feels... This just feels like it's just a good sort of middle ground, because if I listen to something that like it mentally keeps me active for a while, I save a lot of episodes of Harmontown or Doug Loves Movies, but I wake up and I feel exhausted, like my mind has actually been listening to those full episodes,
right.
So I've had to cut that out.
Mine's just, I've had really weird experiences with Sleep With Me specifically just because I don't have trouble sleeping, and so what happens is I'll fall asleep almost immediately.
Yes, yeah.
And then the fact that there's a voice going on for another hour would just wake me up again, like towards the end of the podcast, and I'll wake up and he'll just be in some meandering story about a cat on an adventure, and I'll be like, what is this? There's one night, the first night I listened to it, I was very bleary when I woke up. And I am convinced, I didn't go back and listen to it because I kind of want to preserve the illusion, but I'm absolutely convinced that he was speaking just bona fide gibberish. Like, not English at all. Just like, Shabba, the Shabba Land. Sebekashen.
That sounds almost Yiddish than gibberish.
I was going for Simlish there, but I think I just
yeah,
one
flicker,
step to
flicker.
The left.
It's Malong. It's
that's
yeah.
pretty good Simlish.
Yeah, I know. I like The Sims like ages ago, but after I played 3, I was I think I was in late high school or early uni. I realized I could do the stuff that The Sims do, and that's what stopped me playing it. Like it was this.
Hold on, this suspiciously coincides with the first time you made a real friend. I didn't really have real friends until uni.
Well, yeah.
Sidetrack. I played Sims nonstop until uni, until I realized I could go out and just make friends in the real world.
It was this,
the downside, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Is you can't customize your friend's appearance.
Look, if you really just like adjust your nose with a slider, it'll be great.
Really want a tall friend who looks like a Dracula, and I want another friend who's got like hacked the system to make it look like he's got two noses and his name's Buttface. Wait, no, I'm in Me Generator now.
The oh, you mean like the thing where you would when you got the Wii?
Yeah,
be
the
like
Wii. You make Mii's and you go crazy with them.
Yeah, yeah.
You
no,
get the eyes and then you put like the cheekbones in and you put the dot eyes and it makes it look like he's got boobs on his face. Oh, so many hacks.
There was so many friends who on who I had on yeah friends. There's so many friends that I had who had the Wii and stuff like that, and we would just share copywritten characters back and forth. But then I realized like. The only good thing that you can do with that, other than obviously play with some of the characters, whether it was Wii Sports or WarioWare or
Wii Bowling with Wii Hitler.
Oh, yeah.
Wii Bowling with Whittler. Wii friggin' Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, exactly. It was either that or you could do the thing where you like you just press parade and they all just like walk down like a long thing.
Oh, yeah.
It was, yeah, that was it. That was all you could do with Mii's.
Favorite game on the Wii.
Parade?
Just so addicted to Parade. Clocked 400 hours on Parade, got all the achievements.
There's an Easter egg where if you just hold the remote and you just like move back and forth, you can wave to your Mii's and they'll wave back.
I downloaded the DLC. They come out of the television, they parade around you. It's the best.
Yeah, that's the PS4. No, I mean, you think of the PS4. So I was going to say that in terms of just being geeky and nerdy, do you have any of the new consoles that have come out in the past 2 years?
I do not.
Oh, shit.
Last year.
I just assume you did.
I cracked the shits with all consoles.
Fuck.
And I gave them away. I had all of them. I had a Wii.
Yes.
I had an Xbox.
Yes.
I had a 360.
Yeah.
None of your regular Xbox. A 360. I had a PS3.
Yes.
And I downloaded a thing that allowed me to use my PS4, a PS3 controller on my PC.
Mm.
And then I looked at my consoles like 3 months later and I was like, I haven't touched you guys.
Oh, no.
You guys have to go.
Oh, shit.
So I gave them away.
Oh,
and then I have never had a console since, and I never
it
bloody will.
Oh wow, yep. You're not even excited to see any of the exclusives that are on there. Like you,
the good exclusives come out on PC eventually.
Whoa,
bad ones.
But what about Last of Us?
I don't need to waste my time.
What about did you play Last of Us?
Fuck that game.
Oh no,
I don't give a shit about that game.
You don't. You just don't care.
That game can go to hell.
Oh no.
Now that's the thing. Like, because I'm old now.
Yes,
right? I'm 100.
I genuinely don't know how old you are.
I'm 29.
Okay, that's not that old.
I'm not, I mean, like, I'm not
to be
old.
Fair, anybody who's under 47 I don't think is old.
Yeah, that's a really good cutoff.
Yeah.
I think that's my cutoff as well. 46?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd sleep with you.
Terms of banging? Yeah, it's this method, yeah. No.
47? No.
Beat me to that joke. We don't get laid. The entire sort of spectrum for exclusive games kind of feels like it's just a, like as a gaming ecosystem, it should only be particularly around certain franchises. I find it so weird when somebody launches an IP on a console as an exclusive. That always seems like a weird bit.
Yeah,
I've
seen, you can sort of understand when Sony does it, but but my point about being that I don't have time for games anymore. Like, I have time for games, but I don't have time for games that take, you know, 80-odd hours to finish.
Yeah, yeah.
And all the exclusive ones are like these real epic sagas. And I'm like, you know, give me Spelunky, where it generates a level,
God,
and then
yeah.
I'm dead in 5 minutes.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Spelunky
every time.
We played Towerfall Ascension on the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
That and that, I don't even play that on the Ouya, but like seeing how they've sort of fixed and added to that. I had a friend who.
I really love how you say Ouya.
Was that not what it's called?
I've always just called it the Ouya.
Oh.
Like just way less syllables.
Oh, no.
Ouya.
I love syllables. It's so fun, so much fun. My friend, he backed the Ouya on Kickstarter, and I think he's still working on a game for it,
Oh, that's a long time.
No, not like he was, I think he started off working on a game for it, and then I think he's just going to port it to PC.
Oh, right. Well, yeah. That's sort of a backwards way of doing it. My old company that I used to work for, that I Yeah. My old job, I was a video game developer. Yes. Still am. But my old office, we backed the Ouya, and then we got one, and we sort of tinkered with it for like 2 days, and we're like, all right, back to real work.
That's the kind of weird thing of like, I'm always fascinated with internet nostalgia, and that this... There's kind of these moments in time of, like, it's very rare that any medium before the internet, it was very rare that people had collective sort of experiences with stuff. Television was the closest that anybody had come to it, whether it was a sports game in the US or, like, the finale of MASH or anything like that. But even then, it was never asynchronous. It was never happening at the same time and people were reacting to it. Like, with the internet, I feel like, you know, with big Kickstarter campaigns or when... there's like an awkward flame war on Twitter, or if there's some sort of meme that sort of spirals out of control for 2 days and then goes away, like that sort of thing doesn't really happen on anything else. And then yeah, Kickstarter, like especially with games like Broken Age or
one where you can buy the Star Citizen.
Yeah, Star Citizen. Yes.
Oh, good old Star Citizen.
Oh fuck. And that was, Elite Dangerous.
Let's just keep making references. To things without elaborating on. Star Citizen was a magical game that raised millions.
Yes.
Like millions and millions of dollars.
Millions
like
and millions.
$50 million.
Yes, it was.
Just by selling, like, well, if you pay me $10,000, then I'll make you this spaceship to play around in the game. And then it was in development for ages. And then it, like, premiered. They had, like, the big visual demo of it at some big conference. And it was so bugged out that the guy, like, it just kept crashing. And you had to watch the intro every single time. It was unskippable.
Jesus Christ.
And it's this amazing video. You should go and look it up. Where, like, the guy in the first intro, like, the first thing anybody's seen of Star Citizen, the guy comes out and he puts on his helmet and he hops into the ship. And everyone in the crowd, like, loses their shit. They're like, oh, you're walking around in the hangar. And then there's, like, a seamless transition of, like, climbing up the ladder into the ship and then putting on your helmet and then flying out into space. And everyone's like, oh, my God. And then it crashes immediately.
Oh, right?
And
fuck.
Like, and then it just does that the same thing again. And the first time everybody was like, oh, my God. Right? And then... the second time, everyone was like, oh, still cool. And then the third time, everyone's like, yeah, we get it. He puts on a helmet. And then the fourth time is when it starts to really get, like, something. Because everyone's like, yeah, it's the helmet again. And, like, they start getting more and more excited. Like, it's partly sarcastic excitement, but the helmet became an iconic character in the game now. Everyone's like, oh, Star Citizen, it's that game with the helmet.
It's the helmet game.
Oh,
it's,
man.
Oh,
helmet
man.
Simulator 2014.
It's an extra DLC for the chin strap. The I was gonna say that, like, there's those Kickstarter projects which kind of like set the world on fire, and then when they fail, it's heartbreaking. Like whether it's Code Hero or there was that game where they were gonna like properly emulate like medieval fighting, and then they just literally
Clang,
yeah,
led by Neil Stephenson, fantasy and sci-fi author,
and they stopped making it this year.
They did, yes, because it turns out that. Realistic motion controlled sword fighting combat is not fun. Because there's that nerdy aspect of like, you see a thing and you've just been like, what if I could really do that?
Yeah.
And get as close to really doing that as I can. And I guess that's what developing a good video game is in some respects, is finding the point where it's like, at this point it's fun. At this point it's still fun and it's closer to the thing. And finding that point of like, how close to the thing can you get?
Yes.
Before the fun starts decreasing again.
It's called the Funcanny Valley.
Yeah, I like that.
That's where you have to find that balance between like a game genuinely being fun based on mechanics and actually like as realistic as possible. Like I feel like games like GTA 5 and Saints Row 3 really sort of balance that line. And then there's stuff like GTA 4 and Saints Row 4, which like cross it, and then it's like, oh, it's not as fun as I wish it could be.
Yeah, like, I mean, that sort of pursuit of realism that's so, like, I mean, imagine doing a real-time strategy game like that, where they're like,
fuck that.
Oh, in this real-time strategy game, instead of clicking where you want your units to go, you've got to whisper the commands into the microphone. And
oh, you mean like SOCOM? You mean like the whole, like, fucking franchise that SOCOM was and then died out?
Submit a form to declare war. It's got to go through the bureaucracy.
You have
like,
to find...
This game can go to hell.
You have to hire a human rights lawyer to basically vouch for you in the UN, and a very large part of it is sanctions that you have to repeal under international law.
Press B to say it's not torture.
You have to hold X to filibuster for your next argument. And...
Oh my god, that's the best game! For this game, you have to hold X for 27 hours.
It's like Desert Bus. But for talking. You mentioned before that you're a game developer. Like, can you say what you're working on at the moment?
I cannot.
Oh, never mind. Sorry. I will go into the next bunch of questioning. You created a game, was it nearly a year and a half ago now? Storyball,
I did, yes.
Yeah, that was the first time I ever met Tom before I knew Tom. Mm. I went to PAX while I was working for the Greens, it was a great experience. I absolutely love PAX in terms of the... I guess the camaraderie that I sort of felt.
Are the PAX guys listening to this?
I don't care.
I love PAX. I don't like PAX.
I'm friends
very much,
with like
Matt Harrison. I think Gabe and Tycho were nerds.
The worst thing you can say about
PAX.
They make a lot of money and they enjoy their creative endeavors.
Being famous and nice. I went to bloody PAX Prime. I saw them play Dungeons and Dragons on a stage, and I loved every goddamn second of it.
I'm really sort of getting into. I wish I knew people to play D&D with, because I absolutely love listening to podcasts that are based around it. Like there's Nerd Poker. Which is, I believe that's on Earwolf, and there's obviously Harmontown has a D&D aspect of it as well. Yeah, but it's just fascinating to me because I feel like growing up, I knew what it was just from the movie ET, and I had sort of geeky friends who said that they did it, but I, again, not real friends because they didn't invite me. But it's a whole other sort of situation where I feel like the thing that I've sort of enjoyed more going into my 20s is board games, like just finding people who like Settlers of Catan and Nightfall and those kind of games and stuff like that. Like, and what was the process of making Story War?
So yes, I made it with Brad O'Farrell, who's a good friend of mine, creator of Keyboard Cat, and a bunch of other internet cool things that he's done. He made Story War with me, and we are both from a sort of background of video game development.
Yes.
I was a professional. I've been doing it as a day job for many, many years. Brad's more of a hobbyist, but he's sort of a game designer savant. Like, he just has no technical skills, but a really good just intuition for what's going to be fun and what's going to, just work well in a sort of gamey context. And so I visited him in New York some time ago, and he was like we were throwing video game ideas around, and then I was like, oh, that's actually like how Race for the Galaxy does it. And he's like, what is Race for the Galaxy? And so I bought Race for the Galaxy, which is a card game, and we played that a whole bunch, and basically he just got into board games, and then as soon as I got back to Australia, he was messaging me board game ideas instead of video game ideas. And we just sort of went back and forth with different board game ideas, sort of honing in on this concept of the thing that we like about board games is the fact that you can, like, do things that computers can't calculate, sort of thing. Like, if you're going through a computer, it's always got to be, like, is it this, yes or no? There's no room for sort of fuzziness. And while there's still a lot of board games that are very rigid in their rules, the things that we liked were, like, negotiation sort of storytelling and just sort of diplomacy and convincing people to be on your side. And Story War is pretty much the sort of ultimate perfectly honed down, like there's nothing left to take away kind of thing. It's at its core, it's talking to people.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what we like most about games, is the social experience of it. And so that's the game that we made.
Well, that's like, I felt like that, before I went to PAX, I was a big fan of Munchkin. And I feel like that one of the sort of favorite things about Munchkin is like slowly, not metagaming, because metagaming is fairly frowned upon, but just that sort of social thing where you... for people who've never played Munchkin, there is a certain type of card in Munchkin Cthulhu called Cultist, and it's a class card, and basically if you and a bunch of cultists sort of all have the same card, you can just go off and do weird stuff during the game because certain cards allow that. And I absolutely loved it. To some people, like, cultists are frowned upon in the Munchkin set.
This is such a specific reference.
I know.
I've played tons of Munchkin, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, never mind. Well, yeah, I've literally only played one type of Munchkin. It's Munchkin Cthulhu. And it's I always loved that. I loved doing that, and then I was disappointed that not other board games.
Yeah,
games
some of
like
the expansions for Magic the Gathering had like these ridiculous. Like, they had every couple of years or every once a year. I don't know, on some schedule they'd release these set of cards that were called Unglued, and they were just like not tournament legal cards, but they were all like just filled with ridiculous rules. Like, there was one called like Chaos Confetti. And the rule for Chaos Confetti was, like, tap this card, spend 2 mana, tear this card up.
What?
And throw it over the table, and every bit that, a bit of card lands on is destroyed.
That's fucking awesome!
And there's one that's, like, you know, when activating this card, steal another card from another player's table. And, like, so you're playing in, like, a tournament hall,
You've
got, like, this card that demands that you physically leave the table and physically, like, pilfer a card from somebody else's game and put it into your own game. Oh, man. And there's people do, like, home rules of Twilight Imperium. Have you heard of this?
No, yeah. I have no idea.
So there's this home rule of Twilight Imperium is a board game. It's very, very epic. Games can last, like, 6-7 hours, even longer sometimes, where you all play, like, different space civilizations that are competing for sort of political and military control of the galaxy. And it's very, like, highly themed. Like, everything's very, like, you know, oh, we are the universities of Yolnar and we're the best at technology. But you really get into your, like,
oh,
your guy's
awesome
thing. And people have made these home rules where you have two simultaneous games going of Twilight Imperium. And the wormhole markers on the board, instead of leading from one wormhole to the other, leave into the other game's
what?
Wormhole. And
that's so fucking awesome!
People just, like, you play up, like, 4 hours of the game, and then suddenly, like, this just race that is just totally alien has just come through and is invading your planet. It's so outrageous.
The, I feel like that's like, it's always weird shit like that, because growing up, you kind of, like, play standard board games like Monopoly and Boggle and that kind of shit, but
you've got a bad family.
Yeah. But I was always obsessed with the different versions of Monopoly. Like, I had Pokemon Monopoly and Nintendo Monopoly and just, like, all these different sort of sets and stuff like that. And then when I learned there were, like, fucking board games outside of the, I nearly said Hasbro, what are they called? The
Milton Bradley
kind of sort of subset. Fucking blew my mind.
Yeah,
like,
no,
absolutely...
it's a great realization to make that the board games out there that are good, that, like, make people like each other at the end of it instead of hating each other.
Yeah.
And make people refreshed and instead of exhausted. Like, you play a game of Monopoly.
Yes.
Nobody involved in that game wants to play any board game again for at least a month.
Exactly. Yeah.
And there are so many board games out there where as soon as you finish up, everyone's like, another one.
Yeah.
Let's go again.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it's the same sort of thing where, like, so many people who sort of grow up with mainstream games and then they find out what indie games are and stuff like that. Like, is there anything that you've played recently on Steam? I'm assuming is your only platform that you're.
Yeah, no, I play
really
a lot
enjoy.
Of Steam. I play a lot of little, just, like, download this exe and run it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You got a virus. Shit.
Like,
I've really got to be more discerning with my gaming habits. Oh, man. No, I haven't really been gaming much. I've been too busy.
No, that's fine.
Yeah.
I understand that.
Been too busy.
There's a lot of, like, what I feel are more tech demos, but then they kind of turn into their own game, like Goat Simulator or Where's My Hammer? Which came
out.
Oh, yeah,
and, like, Surgeon Simulator. And,
yeah, exactly, which
I
find...
Just sort of results of people mucking around and then being like, yeah, we've sort of explored this to one degree and then...
Yeah.
Let's just put it out.
Yeah, exactly. Or, what is it called? It was, like, a 7-day FPS where it was, like, 420 blaze. It was, like, a whole game that based around montage parodies.
Huh.
And that Andy Sum made, and it was absolutely incredible.
That's genius.
Yeah, yeah. It was just, like, whenever you would kill people, it'd be like, oh! And just like Doritos and Mountain Dew was like power.
Just everything
like
going Technicolor.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Just like strobe and strobe lights everywhere and stuff like that. Mm. I feel like that's like a like montage parodies in themselves are really like the like there was YouTube poops for the longest time and then they kind of just fell off into like little subsets.
YouTube poops
like
for anyone else listening.
Yes,
so when people take TV shows and just ruin them and then put stupid sound effects and repeat things and put them backwards and it's very bizarre.
Yeah.
Very kind of absurdist sort of humor.
Yeah.
It's sort of conceivably made by a 10-year-old most of the time.
Yeah.
Like, just imagine a 10-year-old who's really good at Bloody Final Cut.
Yeah,
that's a YouTube poop, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Although inexplicably, they're all of videos, all of TV shows that a 10-year-old would never watch.
Well, yeah, it's
they're
like
all
Fresh
like
Prince
check
of
it
Bel-Air
out. It's you know, I've done a thing of the Bloody Legend of Zelda CDI Adventures.
Yeah.
Poop, which you know nobody's played that unless they're 35.
Exactly, but that's the thing is that like the internet culture kind of transcends through age.
Transcends.
And race and...
It can. The internet can turn any adult into a blabbering child.
Yes, that's what this podcast
is
about.
That's the strength of the internet.
Yeah. It doesn't matter how coherent your argument is, like, blah, blah, blah.
You just take away any semblance of intelligence or maturity that you might have had. Take that 10-year-old in. Dropping truth bombs on 10-year-olds.
To sort of get back to the nature of the podcast, is stop nerding out for the 20 minutes that we've had there. How did you
just cut that down to the highlights?
It's just 10 minutes worth of... That's what that comedy preview's for.
Just cut that down to the explanation of Munchkin Cthulhu, that one specific time, and we'll call it a day.
That was... welcome to the Munchkin Cthulhu comedy podcast. Yeah. How did you get started in comedy? Because you, the longest time, again, being a game dev, doing other nerdy shit. And,
yeah, I've always been a nerd, I guess. And so I suppose it's just being a nerd is what got me into it. So I've always been funny. I'm doing an I
wouldn't know what that's
Harrison there. So yeah, no, I've always been into sort of comedy stuff. Like when I was in high school, I would just muck around with my friends, making little short films.
Yeah, yeah.
That were not like short, like you can't call them short films. Sketches, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That were just really dumb. Like we ran over a tub of yogurt with a car, and we just really.
Sorry. Yes.
I still have the opening. This is one of the first sketches, I guess, we ever wrote, which just had like my friend Jacob narrating it very enthusiastically. What happens when a 1-ton car meets a 50-gram tub of La Rice? And then we just ran over it with a car, and it popped very satisfyingly. And that was our sketches in year 10, maybe. And yeah, I was really into web comics and stuff as And I wrote my own web comic on bloody Keen Space at the time, which is now Comic Genesis.
Keen Space.
Yeah, and so it's all that stuff that doesn't summarize. You know, web comics, sketches with your friends.
Yeah,
all those things.
Yeah, yeah. Like you've done amusing things in other mediums.
Yeah. So yeah, I did videos with my friends, and I did this web comic through high school, and then when I got out of that, I started writing for the Geelong Advertiser as a columnist. Just every Saturday.
What did you write about?
Just anything I wanted. I had complete editorial control.
Did you get paid for it?
It was so funny. Yeah, a little bit.
What, like, that's fucking...
I know. I was just...
This is crazy.
Like, it was only one column a week, so I wasn't paying the bills or anything, but it was pretty fun. And yeah, seriously, I don't even think the editor of the paper read it. Like, I just sent in 400 odd words, and he would just put them in the Sunday Geelong Advertiser, and it was... just great. It was really fun.
Do you remember anything ridiculous that you ever put in there that you were amazed that got published? Or?
Oh, man, there was one that was a full... like, all these are 400-word columns. one of them was just entirely devoted to a story of me telling my friend on the phone that I had just put on my socks using only my feet. And that was... that was in print. But also, on the counter side of this, I've had this great ability to just... write whatever the hell I want and get it printed.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, I am technically an ex-Murdoch journalist.
Oh!
Of course, Geelong Advertiser is ultimately owned by News Corp.
Limited. Yeah, yeah.
News Limited.
I've got a friend who...
what are they called? I don't know.
They are called News Limited now. News Corp is the bigger corporation, but in Australia, all of their publications and much larger subsidiaries are under News Limited.
It's more like Limited News, am I right?
No, we'll get to that political comedy
like
in a second.
Propaganda Limited.
Again, the internet. It's just the...
You don't need the internet to be...
you just gotta read a Murdoch paper and fucking... let's just do it now. You had been mocking former Premier Napthine. Napthine? Fuck. I haven't been here long enough to know the political...
No, I'm not even gonna say Napthine.
More like Napthine. More like Nutella. Fuck.
Now we got bloody Dandy Andy.
What's that mean?
New Premier Daniel Andrews.
Oh, right, yes. The
That's
pudding
my new
specialist.
Name with Dandy Andy. Let it catch on. At Dandy Andy. Change your Twitter tag.
If he ever goes on a Virgin Galactic flight, he can be Space Dandy Andy.
I guess.
But, oh, you don't know the anime Space Dandy? No, fuck it. All right, it's...
Space Cowboy.
Well, you mean Cowboy Bebop.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's fine.
What is that?
What?
What's that anime? Is that like one of those Korean cartoons?
Like The Simpsons?
No, I don't need to worry about Dennis Napthine anymore, though.
No.
Because he's dead.
So they changed his Twitter account, like, straight away.
It was Vic_Premier, and now he's Dennis V. Napthine.
What's that V stand for? Is that what his middle name is?
Dennis versus Napthine. Tonight!
Dennis Vagina Napthine, no relation. Okay, wow. That was quick. That was, yeah, I
imagine that his social media manager is really on top of it.
Well, I'm sure his social media manager is fired. that's sad. I work in social media. It's not good when we lose our jobs to electoral situations. I had a friend who was actually still working at a News Corp company, because they own companies that are not publications. They own full websites and stuff that. So it's interesting, like, the people who work for News Limited, they're aware of their bias, but they still work for them, because it's like that thing that there's that Simpsons episode where he, Deep Space Homer, where he's like, I think it might actually be a deleted scene where he's talking to his mom about... Oh, shit, no.
Is this the podcast of really specific references?
Yeah, it is.
Guys, have you played that one card in Munchkin Cthulhu? Oh, okay, have you seen that deleted scene from episode 7.02 of The Simpsons?
It was a part of the 138th episode spectacular. Yeah, it is a deleted scene. It's from the episode where he meets his mom, and he tells her, he's like, I'm bringing it down from the inside. Like, when he's talking about the nuclear power plant and stuff like that. I feel like people who work for News Corp who have that bias against them, like, I'm happy to take their money.
They're doing a great job.
Yeah, exactly.
Keep it up, guys.
It's more money that they don't have to tell News Limited's people.
Crumbling as we speak.
Well, they keep posting.
God, look out the window. Is that News Corp? It's tower. Its whole tower's fallen over.
Oh, no.
Oh shit. That's actually really dangerous. Oh, God. Oh,
it's so terrible. Hey, remember that episode? But no, so when, how long ago did you start doing comedy? Because you're 29 now.
Yeah, so I was doing just YouTube videos for a while.
Yes.
And then I was just doing...
You made Story War. And
yeah, that was after I was... I don't know, the timeline. I'm really bad at that kind of stuff. So I was doing YouTube videos for a while. Yes. And then as just sort of a little attachment to a YouTube convention that I was attending, they had like a big live show thing where a bunch of YouTube musicians were playing music and a bunch of YouTube comedians were doing stand-up.
Yes.
And just, yeah, some friends of mine in YouTube were just like, you gotta do it, man. You gotta do stand-up. And so my first ever gig was to genuinely this packed hall of like 400 people. And I absolutely slayed it because it turns out that freaking YouTube audiences are the easiest people in the world to impress. You just say any old shit. Just like, oh my God, I gotta have more of this.
Star Wars, more like Star Wars, Marugas. That's yeah, YouTube comedy is very bad.
Oh, there's some dire stuff. I mean, there's some really great stuff out there as well.
Oh yeah,
but
truly.
For the most part, and especially the stuff that gets millions and millions.
That's
of views,
what I'm talking
generally
about.
Generally, just this weird kind of brand of non-comedy where they're just like, oh, did you see this? Like.
Yeah.
That's me doing a really good boy-oying sound.
Yeah, yeah.
Boy-oying, that's better.
Well, I'm sure Hanna-Barbera can sample that for the next bunch of cartoons. There are... That sounded so mean, sorry.
Yeah, I'll fucking send that off to Hanna-Barbera.
It was so
bloody
fucking good,
sample
man.
Sample that for the next bloody cartoon.
I wish I could make the sound of, like, what I call, like, space scooters, which is like... Like, they use that in, like, Futurama and, like the Jetsons and stuff like that when there's, like, a vehicle sound. Leaving. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Let's just make sound effects for the next 20 minutes. So I did,
Yes.
I did that one gig that was to this huge, packed, incredibly warm crowd.
Yes.
And that was super fun. And coming out of that, a friend of mine was just like, you gotta keep doing this. I was like, yeah, okay. He's like, no, you gotta promise me you'll keep doing this. I was like, all right. I swear on my sword. That I'll keep doing stand-up comedy. And then I came back to Melbourne. I did a gig at Death Star to sort of slightly less than 400 people who are slightly less warmed up, but yes. I still loved it just as much, and here I am today.
Yeah, you've had several fringe shows under your belt. You have a show with Tom Lang called The Impossible Showcase, which you...
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
I love it.
That was mostly me being a comedy spectator more so than a comedy putter on her.
Yeah.
Because while we organized it, it was just... everybody else that we knew that they could get to do it just doing their craziest stuff, and that was so much fun getting on there and seeing new insane stuff every night. Oh, it's the best.
That's really good. Like I feel like the Impossible Showcase, like there's so many acts that I'd seen but never knew that they could do any stuff like that. Like Ellie Squire, who we had on last week, she did
show.
A very good friend of the show. She's great. She did like burlesque improv with Lisa Sky.
Yeah,
that was fucking incredible.
Is this coming from? I didn't know she could do burlesque.
But no, I had never seen improv improv burlesque. Like I went to. I really love that idea of just like to steal from the set list, like comedy without a net, like people just try and shift the first time.
Yeah, that's absolutely where my passion is as well.
Yeah,
just seeing new material, new comics.
Yes,
is like
it's super exciting
when it's on the edges of what they. That's going on. That's my favorite, and that's I really like that. Like, I mean, polished material is great, and I
totally
absolutely love to sit down and watch, you know, Louis C.K.'s new special or whatever. But my main enjoyment of it is seeing people trying out new stuff and, you know, pushing what they're doing.
Well, I feel the exact same way. Like, I went to Fuck Club for the first time ever last night.
Props to Fuck Club.
It's
love that place.
Absolutely incredible. Mm. I never thought I would ever see any of the comedians that I saw do the stuff that they do. And I left with a sense of I should probably never do comedy again. But it was okay. it was okay because I went home and I read for a bit, and then I watched like a fail compilation on YouTube, and then I felt a little bit better before I fell asleep. But the but the excitement in the room and how raw everything was was incredible.
Mm.
It was absolutely fantastic.
I think that kind of stuff. It's a little bit not targeted at Fight Club, but just experimental sort of very fringy comedy. I think can be a little bit sort of masturbatory. Like it is.
Like Circle almost Jerk
exclusively
more?
Performed to comics. Like you never go to an experimental comic room and see like, oh, this is mostly punters. Like it's always, you know, like 20 comics in there seeing their comedy friends
do something weird.
And like I suppose that's probably partly why I like it. It's just because I'm really social and I'm just like, oh, all my friends are here and doing a thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I think there's sort of a bit of an in jokey element to sort of. Pretty much all experimental comedy.
Yeah.
Which I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I'm not, I'm absolutely not criticizing. I'm just exploring an idea.
No, that's fine.
All experimental comedy is a fucking in joke.
Yes.
For just comics joking themselves off.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's playing up a male comic stereotype
there. Oh man. How, man, you know, if regular comedy is like sex, then experimental comedy is like jerking off. That's what that is.
Oh man. That's a really.
Terrible.
That's
terrible.
Like a really interesting subversion of the thing. Usually it's just doing comedy at all. It's like sex.
Yeah.
What's the really stereotypical open micer? No, see, here we are again. Like, making fun of new open micer jokes is very much a comedian's in jokey.
I've only been doing it for 4 months, so I feel like I'm still on that fence.
Oh, like a comedian getting up and doing, like, doing comedy is like sex. That is common one.
Yes,
and doing like a series of masturbation jokes. Those are like, really prime, like making fun of this person sort of material. But
yes.
They're like.
I've seen many an
to
MC.
To a crowd that doesn't know comedy back to
exactly,
front, it's
yeah.
still sort of funny material. I'm not defending it. If you're thinking of doing comedy, don't open with that joke because close with it. Yeah. Do whatever you want, man. Tell whatever jokes you like. Get
exactly.
comfortable on
you
stage.
Should,
worry about
do...
the material when you've. When you've figured out,
you should really do stuff that makes you laugh or what you think is funny. Because it's worse when you say a joke and not even you think it's funny. Because that was like the first.
Jokes,
yeah,
it's not good.
Like listening back to old material, I've definitely found that there's just stuff like, why did I make those noises with my mouth? It's terrible.
I shouldn't even be giving advice, man. I've only been doing this for like 2 years now.
Oh, okay.
Which is, I mean, no,
I have you on because you're a friend and I like talking with you.
Yeah,
but no, that's
fine. I've been doing stand up for 2 years, but I've been writing and doing comedy for at least a decade. So I feel I'm still I'm allowed to prescribe whatever kind of comedy methods I want.
Well, so I feel like that's different though because I used to write comedy screenplays and stuff like that. Like I've written a whole bunch of pilots that have been like workshopped and stuff like that.
It's similar things. Like I mean, if you know how jokes work and you know how to make people laugh, then it'll translate. Like it won't translate one to one.
No.
But like there's obviously way different techniques to doing stand up to doing sort of scripted stand up.
Yes.
And doing like sketches and like all the different forms. They all need different skills. But the sort of core idea of like knowing how to take an idea and turn it into a funny thing.
Yes.
That's a transferable skill.
Yeah, yeah. No, well, it's weird because, like, I was discussing this with my friend last night. I wish, like, this is how bad it was. I told her, like, I wish no one has ever told me I was funny because that would make me feel so much better about what I do.
Because
for years and years, whether it was high school or uni or at work, like not where I work now because they're all... They don't find me funny. But where, like, it was always like somebody being like, huh, you should do stand-up. Or, like, that's really funny. Like, huh, the worst one that I ever got in terms of that, and it's always stuck with me, and I fucking hate it. It was just like, huh, you should have your own show called The Harrison Show. It was just like, fuck you. I hated that every single time I heard that. It happened,
I will
like,
never have my own show.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, I hate my
Tom
name.
Tom looks around the room.
I hate my name so much that I feel like that's why, I feel like that was more into it than anything else. I know, but I don't
like
know what would be
bucks.
Better. Yeah.
Ben.
I don't have 60 bucks. I don't want to be a Ben. I know too many Bens.
Pick a great name. Laser. You can.
Yeah.
You can do it.
I could do it. No, I already.
Broadsword.
I feel weird that I feel like I have to own it now. Like
AK-47 Angstrom.
Also, my address. It's no. It's It's weird that like sort of growing up and sort of loving comedy and stuff like that. Like, I feel like I'm at this point now where I've been doing stand up for a tiny amount of time, but no one really knows me or what I do. Or in, like, in terms of
having a weird name's good for comedy anyway.
I feel like my name's too long. Like, it's 8 letters plus another 8 letters, and it's, I feel like, like comedians' names are short or they're really specific.
Yeah, but they don't tweet poster lineups.
No, well, no, yeah, but it's still like people can see the name being like, that name is too complicated. I don't want
to
see that.
Just
person.
Shorten it to Han.
What? No, shit. I could totally do that.
There you go, Han Engstrom.
Oh fuck. Oh man, I'm.
That's pretty sick.
Yeah.
Oh, have I just renamed you?
Yeah, you did. Everybody, hello, and welcome to the third episode of That Comedy Podcast. I'm so glad you guys are here. It's absolutely... You're a stable audience now. After, like, the last episode, I'm Han Engstrom, and we have Tom McLean in the studio.
Hey.
It's really good. Fuck, I could totally do that.
Are you going to be Han or Han?
I'm going to let people choose how they want to say it.
Oh, that's nice.
Because I'll be like, you can say it however you want. Like,
I really respect people who are just like, I don't care how you say my name.
I feel like
just
a cunt every time I have to say it's Harrison Engstrom.
It's a children's show.
You too can grow up and do comedy. It's so weird. And especially like even spruiking this podcast, I feel like I don't like saying my name in general. I feel like I could just say, hey, I'm that guy. And that would just make things so much easier.
Say Han.
It's Han. No, it's not. It's either. It's
I
so great.
Rolled by Han Engstrom.
So great.
But no, in terms of, sort of experimental comedy, like in Melbourne and stuff like that, I feel like stuff comes in waves, and especially if it's like stuff I've seen like through international crowds and stuff like that. Like, I feel like there's like a big wave of something coming because there's so many people who are doing so many amazing things, and it's kind of like the stuff that people were doing in the US like 3 or 4 years ago, and it's like just come through now. Like the stuff that, like Tim and Eric are doing, and now they're like very popular, they're very well known names, and like fucking tour the world doing their shit. Like, I can imagine like the guys from like Fancy Boy or Auntie Donut like doing that like in
there's
6 months
some great
time. Like, it's
very talented people around. I think the key is not even like, hey, if you're listening to this podcast right now, the key to enjoying comedy is not wait until the great stuff gets big.
Yes.
Just go out.
Just fucking do it and watch it.
There's so much good comedy in Melbourne at the moment. It's the best.
The reason we say at most of... Not me and Tom, because Tom has his own room, which we'll get into later. But it's the people say, like, thank you for coming to support live comedy, because we genuinely mean it.
Yeah.
Because it's fucking incredible that you're out supporting it.
I'm just going out supporting live comedy is the best.
Yeah, yeah. Wait, you... Okay, so I can easily bring it up now, because it's a very shitty segue.
Oh, yeah. That's a perfectly good segue. Let's talk about comedy rooms, by the way.
Tom McLean. The McLean?
McLean, yeah.
McLean. And very, very good person. I was going to say what friend. I don't know! I can't say friend, Tom. I can't say friend.
But, I mean, what...
Shit. Yeah. Sorry, I'm hitting the
I don't know what you're leading
thing
into.
Sorry.
Speaking of comedy rooms, Tom McLean's my friend.
Tom McLean and Simon Cumming run a fantastic room in Fitzroy called The Wild, which they've actually just changed the format up recently, which I absolutely love, and it's called Hotspot.
Yeah.
Do you want to pitch it? You should... I feel like you should say
oh,
it.
Oh, sure. It's just an open mic. Sign up on the night comedy room.
It's just an open mic. Sorry, yeah.
Let me pitch.
That's fine.
Harrison.
I'm just going to burp over here.
All right.
That's okay.
Can I do one?
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
See. All right. Yeah, I run a room called Hotspot. It's on every Thursday night of the Wild at 7 o'clock. It's a sign-up on the night open mic style one, so just show up before 6:45, put your name in the bucket, you can get a spot. In fact, you will get a spot because we put everybody on. If you're in the bucket by 6:45, you are on the night. That's my solemn oath to you.
Yes.
And then also, at some point during the night, somebody eats a chili and they... do their comedy
it
while
could
they're,
be you. No,
while
it
they're having too much
you
spicy times.
Like, I'm absolutely terrified of just even being in the front row during the chili thing, because there's two things that spice makes me hiccup, and I fucking hate it. I hate hiccuping because it takes so long to go away.
Oh my God.
And it's not that funny.
You're gonna eat the chili sometime.
No, it would just be me being like,
be the best.
So my fiance left me, and I would just cry. I would cry. I would just
it's
be going
so funny
to,
right
would,
now.
It's so bad. Here's the thing is, I went to there's a really nice Mexican food place down the road from Hotspot.
It's called Trippy Tacos.
It's called Trippy Tacos. Ooh, the sponsor of this episode. And they just had, I thought, look, I'll try it. I'll try one of their spicy sauces because they have so many spicy sauces that you can enjoy with your vegan burrito. I'm
a big fan of spicy, and I love Trippy Taco because of how many spicy sauce alternatives they've got for me.
It's so with Hotspot, the chili that's usually eaten is a habanero, and
you
the
don't need to say it. Like
I know
that. It's just
I'm
habanero.
Saying it like Vakili says it. It's
habanero.
Oh, she's great.
The, it's... So I thought, you know what? Look, I'll try one of these spicy sauces, because I thought, I'm here, I paid for this burrito, I just got, like, paid for a freelance gig, I'm going to enjoy this, but I'm going to eat half the burrito first, so I don't waste the entire thing. So I eat half the burrito, and then I put... It was a habanero and mango sauce, and I just put it on a tiny bit of it.
It sounds so good.
And I felt fucking awful, and I couldn't stop hiccuping for about half an hour. And I didn't want to leave. I just didn't want to leave, because I was afraid to eat more of it, so I just kind of, like, ate around where I knew I put the sauce and stuff like that while hiccuping. And I just... It was just bad. It was just so, so bad. And also, if people, like, go... like, they're going to throw up?
You don't want to get chucked up on. No, we've got a little bucket hidden.
No, no, because I will throw up. Even just the sound is, like,
man,
a trigger.
I've got sympathy chucks.
Yeah.
That's the best.
It's bad.
Man, someday somebody will throw up at Hotspot, and it's going to be...
It's going to be so good.
The best hot... No, it's going to be really awful. I'm going to feel terrible.
Because you did this,
Tom. I'm going to clean it up.
I was going to say, like, sort of get back to the political stuff, but randomly. How did you feel about the election on Saturday?
Because I feel like results are yet to come in, because I'm a big Greens man, and Ellen Sandel's victory in Melbourne is... at risk.
Oh, what the... What?
Yeah, maybe they didn't win.
What?
New votes have been coming in, and it's like... They when they declared victory, they had, a solid, 1.5% lead, and now it's down to, 0.05 or something.
God.
Like, it's back down to a knife edge. And this is gonna... this is gonna be gripping listening, the one day before it's finalized. This is gonna be just so much hindsight. Oh, Tom, you didn't have anything to worry about. Oh, yep, no, that was fun.
I realize now that doing topical stuff is a waste because I dropped this on Friday.
Yeah.
All right. Good to know. Podcast 101. I was going to say that in terms of nerdy culture, is there just stuff in nerdy culture that you just really hate or just despise?
Are you just directly segueing into Gamergate here?
No, I'm not. No. I was just thinking about the fact
of
that...
horrible things in good nerd culture.
Is there anything
recently that's happened in the news that made you hate all nerd people?
Hashtag yes, all gamers. I was gonna say that in terms of because you're in both camps where in terms of I feel like there's a certain type of comedy in video games which is very heavily reference based, or it's just not that funny. And I feel like there's a lot of it I just don't like and I don't enjoy.
Yeah, it's because writing for video games is a very very weird beast because it happens in parallel with the development of the game.
Yes,
which means a lot of the time, as a video game writer, you're not given a platform of hey, what do you want to write? You're given a platform, you're given a spec from the game designer, saying all right, here's the game, here's what the levels are in this order. So you've got to write a narrative that takes us from the little village to the fire level, to the ice level in this order, and then they got to fight this guy who can shoot rocket launchers from his fists, and then the toxic level, and then blah, blah, blah. And so it's much more sort of, there's much less freedom to it. And then also every line of dialogue that you write is money, because you've got to record it.
Yeah.
And so...
It's not just you just wrote this line where it's just well, it looks like the Butronians are going to force themselves into Neptune and Uranus. And then there is a voice actor who has to record that, and then there's animators who have to animate that entire...
Yes,
it's a huge
amount of work to revisit anything, basically.
Oh,
so you're writing under an extremely restricted sort of set of circumstances. And then also a lot of video game budgets, despite being enormous, are still the work that's being done fills that budget entirely. Very often, even in really big games, they have very, very little money allocated to writers because the culture of video games is just they don't really care about the quality of the writing. There's a couple of studios who are exceptions to that, Gearbox, who do the Borderlands series.
Which is written by Anthony Birch. Borderlands 2 on, who created the absolutely incredible series, Hey Ash, What's Your Plan?
Yeah, so they the reason that the Borderlands series... are so funny and well written is because Gearbox just trusts their writers and gives them a huge degree of creative freedom.
And it's very character based. That game is very good. And the same way, the thing that I've enjoyed most about definitely the last 5 years of gaming is being able to connect with characters beyond projecting myself onto a white guy with very little hair. Mm. It's, you know, it's actually like... I understand why they do that.
Those games are still available for fans of that genre.
For people who have very little personality and have co-opted their entire identity based around, yeah, it's fucking pretty good, yeah, but I just wish I could just kill more people. It's fucking pretty alright, yeah.
You don't need to invalidate a whole swath of gamers. That's a legitimate pursuit.
That's okay. No, that's
I mean,
fine.
You could describe the rules of chess in that voice and you'll see.
Yeah, I'm just
going to commit it en passant here.
I just fucking wish you'd just stop fucking traveling. If you just fucking just...
Oh, God.
Such a fucking pussy just trying to, like... If you're just going to do the four fucking checkmate, four-move checkmate, just why don't you just fucking tell me the beginning? If you're just going to do it...
The Rosenberg opening of 1974, all right.
Fucking thinks he's Kasparov. What a fucknut. chess jokes. Sorry, I have to also say...
Plane versus Deep Blue. PvP, please. What's that? Playing against the AI. That's bullshit.
Bobby Fischer, more like Bobby Pisser. What a what a fucking. Anyway, sort of. I mean, I feel like I should say it's a whole podcast series. Just guys who are just like highly intelligent enough to like be in the big leagues of chess. But just
My god, you guys, please still playing chess. It's just fuck that Go's got so much better strategic depth. Doesn't have any bloody DLC like Castling and.
That's
I've exhausted my chess references.
It's okay,
I'm sorry, everyone. I wish I could have gone on for longer, but
he's trying to fucking make a play for the pawn to reach the other side, and he's just gonna get a fucking queen back. I don't see the fucking. He's got like, look, it's dumb.
Yeah,
it's dumb.
No, we milked that way
it's
too
good.
Much.
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna cut the entire thing out.
Oh man, the beauty of podcasting.
It's great. It's just... so much fun. I should say that you have a show tomorrow. Actually,
I do have a show tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
This drops on Friday, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's called Geek Out.
It is called Geek Out at the Butterfly Club.
So
that's its full name.
So chic. It's yeah.
Yeah, Geek Out at the Butterfly Club, and it's at the Butterfly Club.
Yeah,
it's at 10:30. It's a panel show.
I'm so excited for it.
Fans of our previous shows, We Should Know Better, That Sexy Show, and Alan Smithy's Screen Test. Will be sure to love Geek Out at the Butterfly Club, and also so will anybody with a heart. Because it's going to be really fun. No, it's really good.
What the fuck was that?
Anybody with a heart.
Yeah. No,
it's going to be really good.
It's great. No, sorry. Yes, it will be amazing. I'm looking forward to it.
It will genuinely. We've got
I wish I could come, but I've got a bath. I've got a housewarming. And
yeah. Just leave early. It doesn't start until 10:30, dude.
I know. We could probably all go together.
Just roll on. It'll be great.
I'll ask him. It's I met one of your writers who's helped out with Alan Smithy and is doing Geek Out as well.
Yes.
Yes.
Which one?
Tom
Ryan.
No.
Andrew.
No. It's a female.
Josie.
Yes, that's who it is. Radical Josie. That's yeah. I met her at a few weeks back.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's cool.
Yeah, she's cool. She's no, because she pitched it to me and I was like, I know I'm gonna have Tom on the podcast and he's gonna talk about it, which I'm not letting you do right now. What is the nature of the show, Tom?
So it's a panel show where we get wonderful comedians in to just basically show off their nerd knowledge and nerdiness. It's all a celebration of geeky, nerdy sort of culture.
Yes.
With really funny, entertaining people up on a stage. It's basically just a game show, quiz, panel show format.
Yes.
It's just us mucking around. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be so much fun. And it's the Butterfly Club, 10:30.
Butterfly Club.
Saturday night.
10:30 on Saturday night.
Really
our lineup.
Oh, yes. Who are you having?
So we've got regular team captain Sophie Kneebone and Kate Denadin.
Yes.
And then we've got Simon Cumming, Ellie Squire, Clara Cupcakes.
Yep.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
Angus Brown.
Oh, cool.
And Ben McKenzie, Geek King himself.
I feel like I should know. Like I
yeah, you really should know Ben McKenzie.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like the geeky comedy wizard of Australia.
Okay, cool.
He's a good get.
I thought that was
I guarantee there's 100 people listening to this podcast right now
as we're
recording it somehow.
Who knows Ben McKenzie?
Who are just like, holy shit, Ben McKenzie's gonna be on.
He's gonna be so good.
Oh my god, Kate Dennett's gonna be on Geek Out.
She is.
Oh my god, Ellie's got every single. Ellie, oh my god, so many. Great. I'm genuinely really excited for the show. I'm such a big fan of everybody on there. Oh, it's going to be so much fun.
You're hosting it, I'm assuming.
I am hosting it, yes.
Okay,
and we've
good.
Got the prestigious Tom Lang behind the scoreboard yelling out things as a disembodied voice, which is
always
how
fun.
It's best to experience Tom Lang, because he is a weird-looking gentleman. No, he's not really.
Jesus.
He does fine.
You live with him.
I do.
What's it like living with Tom?
Oh,
Tom?
It's hell. Gotta come down, see that weird looking face every bloody morning. No, Tom's great.
How long have you guys lived together?
Not even a year. I moved in March.
Yeah, because that place was... Yeah, that place is new and shit to you guys.
Yeah. Oh, Lang's been living there for years.
I love it. I love it. I've had two...
We have a really cool party house.
It's fucking awesome.
And if you're mates with me, you should come to my party.
It's so awesome.
Because we have such a good party.
It's so great. I've been to two already.
You can bring alcohol.
Yeah.
We have boys and girls.
Oh, man.
Everything you want to party.
That's so great.
We register it with the police beforehand.
That's cool.
So that they can just
fuck.
Call
I should
up
do that. That's yeah.
You don't. We don't really. Oh, I've
okay.
never done that. I mean, you can. Did yeah, you know
yeah.
you can?
Yeah. No. No. You showed me that form.
Party safe.
Party safe.
Don't forget to register your party before the fun cracks off.
Party
it's going
safe,
to be so good. I suppose it is good in that if you get a noise complaint, the police can just call you up on your phone and just be like, "Hey, can you turn it down, mate?"
Well, I was going to say that
instead of crashing in the front door and harsh in the mellows.
The parties at my place, I feel like, because I'm a new resident, I'm actually going to type out a letter saying, hey, I'm sorry if I make
oh,
too much
yeah.
noise, and then just slip it into the mailboxes, and then I'm going to put my number down the bottom.
It's a really good etiquette, and I found out that it's really, like, because you've done, like, this slightly nice thing, they're just like, no, we don't want to ruin his party. I wish you'd shut up, but...
I want to invite them, but I don't know them. I don't know any of my neighbors.
Well, you're never going to know them if you don't invite them, Harrison.
All I know is that there is a very lowly Korean family on one side, and then there's another family on the other side.
Ooh.
What?
Don't invite families to parties.
No, that's I'm not going to. I'm just saying. I mean, that's a... Because we do drugs and drink and stuff and play Cards Against Humanity, which
you
is...
You guys are going to have just a potluck.
Yeah.
Just invite them around for
well,
that.
I'm trying to lose weight, so I feel like that's against what I'm trying to do.
You can still eat.
Yeah, I can still eat. I'm just saying
just
that, like...
Just put a little asterisk on the invite. By the way, I'm trying to lose weight, so please only
yeah,
bring...
Yeah,
like 200... Lettuce.
The dish. Someone brings lettuce to a potluck?
Grated carrot wrapped up in a lettuce. Like a little horrible Vietnamese spring roll. I dip it in soy sauce, but that's got too much sugar in it.
Trying to cut down on my sodium intake and I feel like it's too much. Oh, fuck, I want to. I'm really hungry.
Yeah, I want a Vietnamese spring roll.
Well, there's one like down the street we could probably. Mm. Yeah. Tom Clan, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been absolutely fantastic.
We're
we can
so
keep
hungry.
Talking about stuff.
Well,
we don't have enough budget to bring
we've only
food.
Been recording for 20 minutes, but I really want one of these Vietnamese spring rolls.
See, that's how I end podcasts with
just food. Get the guests
no,
hungry
can,
enough that they have to leave.
Is there anything you really wanted to discuss with me? I feel like if there's stuff on the podcast in general.
Geek out. Butterfly Club.
Yep.
10:30 p.m.
Is it going to be monthly or you got to wait it out and see how
we're
is.
Still sorting out the schedule. I think the next one will be February. We
okay.
might do like alternating Geek Out, Alan Smithy, Geek Out, Alan Smithy. It
oh,
depends on people's
great.
Availability.
No, that's really good.
Yeah. But it's going to be good.
I fucking love trivia and panel shows. Like, I feel like that's... This sounds so awful, mainly because of what I said before about me doing comedy in general. But, like, my goal is to be good enough to be asked to be on a panel show.
Oh, yeah, that was genuinely one of my goals.
Yeah.
Getting into stand-up in Melbourne, it was like, I really want to be on, like, Buzzcocks or QI. Or, like, that's...
Oh,
that
not
like
that. I just
no,
mean
no,
in
that's
general.
What I'm saying. Like, the sort of top of the pyramid goal was, like, one of those shows. And then I've been doing it for, like, 2 months. And I was a guest on We Should Know Better. Way back
Fuck.
In the day. I was like, oh, this is actually way more achievable than I expected.
Not when you're unfunny like me.
Aww.
It's so good to do comedy in Melbourne, because it's just, I feel like...
Comedy in Melbourne has such a good scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone's... Not everyone, but, like, it's a very welcoming space, and there's so many talented people.
Yeah, yeah.
And so many talented people who aren't dickheads. It's
yeah, exactly.
Really, like, it's not like I go in with an expectation of
dickheadery, no.
but... It's people who are, like, really super talented, and then you try your stuff, and people are like, ah, that was really cool. And you're
yeah.
like, no, you're really cool.
Yeah.
Everybody's so cool.
That's awesome.
I love you, Melbourne comedy
That's
scene.
So great.
My life is so much better since doing Melbourne comedy scene.
Are you doing Raw this year?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I think I'm going to give it a miss this year.
You're busy with all your...
I don't even really know why. I just saw the thing. I was like, I think I'll give it a miss. It's my last one. I'm only allowed one more Raw ever.
Oh, because of your age.
Oh, no, you're allowed to be... Hey, man.
Yeah, sorry.
Not,
I know it's...
Yeah,
so
I'm not allowed
of...
to do class bloody clowns anymore.
It's like S Club 7 when you reach a certain age and then you're not allowed to be in S Club anymore.
Yeah, you're only allowed to do Raw 3 times.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then if you do your third one and you don't get through, then you just get a tattoo on your face that says, not funny.
Can't wait till I get to that
I haven't
point.
Made it through a single... I haven't made it through a Raw Heat yet.
Oh, okay.
It's you and I. People like you and I... We're at a disadvantage.
Okay, why?
Because we're white men in our 20s. No, so, I genuinely have heard that Raw does prioritize people who aren't white men in their 20s.
Good.
And I think that
fucking
is a
good.
Fucking good thing.
Yeah.
Like, we should be at a disadvantage in Raw because we're at an advantage in every fucking
yeah.
other aspect.
We can do anything. And if you can't do anything, that's literally a problem with you.
Yep.
Yep. As a white male. That's, I'm just saying.
Yeah, hey, white males with any kind of disability.
No, not that. Fuck, Jesus
you
Christ.
Son of a bitch, Harrison.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
This was I Hate Disabled. That would be a terrible... There's probably podcasts out there of just people who have, like, awful niches of just, like, filling in. Like, because there's, like, people like Alex
I can
Jones.
Cite names of them, but I don't want to make comedy enemies. They're not Melbourne...
No,
they're
I don't
not
mean
Melbourne
comedians.
Comedy.
I mean, like,
oh, no, there
podcasts.
Are comedians. There are
like
Melbourne
just...
comedian podcasts.
Oh, God.
No, did I say Melbourne comedian? I don't know any Melbourne comedy podcasts that I have that are objectionable. But there are, like, there are...
Melbourne-based
I'm a
podcast.
Comedian, and I'm,
oh,
I'm a
shit.
Podcast that
okay.
is just, like... Yeah, I'm genuinely not going to name any names.
No, that's
but...
fine. Don't. It's not necessary. I can't have them on as guests, if that's the case.
Oh, they're Americans. They're, like,
oh, okay.
High-profile American comedians.
Oh.
One of whom I saw in Adelaide do a live recording of his podcast, and it was the worst comedy experience I've ever had.
Oh, no.
It was the worst piece
did
of
you
shit.
Did you just name the person?
I hated every goddamn second of it. It was not funny, just objectionable. It was just him making racist and homophobic and transphobic and misogynistic jokes one after the other. He opened with like 8 rape jokes in a row.
Jesus.
It was genuinely just like, Jesus! What the fuck, man? You are a horrible person. And then every time the crowd turned against him, which was regularly, he'd be like, I'm just making jokes.
Funny's
what
funny.
Do?
Yeah.
What? No, you guys don't know what funny is. I'll tell you what, mate. I feel like 60 people in a room not laughing at the thing that you just said isn't what funny is.
Yeah.
Ah, fucking hate that guy.
It's always weird seeing those type of, like people who are definitely established and just doing
yeah.
straight up racist and,
yeah.
and just insensitive.
Just
and, like,
unapologetic garbage.
Yeah. There really is, like, if you can craft a joke, it can be funny and offensive, and it can be very well done. Like, I think, I don't always really find it funny, but Jimmy Carr has made a living out of doing that.
Yeah.
But, like... It's, you know, it's a lot of one-liners.
That's sort of Jimmy Carr's sort of thing is he does, like, incredibly offensive stuff, but he does it so overtly as a joke that...
Yeah, it's
anything
obvious.
He says,
yeah.
it like, it's not necessarily like you don't believe that he takes it seriously, but his sort of manner of comedy is... It's really transparent that it doesn't matter whether he takes it seriously or not because
exactly,
the joke
yeah.
is the point. The point isn't the point.
Yeah.
Whereas, Eddie F... His comedy very much came across as like, hey, we're all thinking this, aren't we? I'm just the one who's saying it.
Oh, boy.
Which
hate,
is just
hearing that.
The worst.
Well, it's just like Anthony Jeselnik. I started listening to... he has an album called Caligula, which came out, I think, a year or two ago. And, yeah, same kind of style as Carr and stuff like that. But like, he just rolls... He's just got this very deadpan, straight kind of like... delivery. And that it just, like, you can always hear, like... light gasps in the audience, and then there's just this huge build of laughter. I'm like, I fucking love it every time.
Yeah, see, like, doing controversial and offensive stuff is awesome, but
yes.
just don't be a dickhead. Really.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not that hard. It's not that hard to not be a dickhead. It's really easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're not a dickhead, Tom, and I'm glad that we're
too.
Friends.
I'm glad that I'm not a dickhead.
Yeah.
And whether we're friends or not remains to be seen.
Fuck.
Because maybe I am a little bit of a dickhead.
Oh, no. I have friends who are dick. Do I? Yeah, I have friends who are dickheads. But I forgive them for it.
Yeah, you can be friends with a dickhead.
Exactly. It's not a big issue.
He's a dickhead, but he's all right.
Yeah, he's good. He's a good one of them dickhead mates.
Yeah. The old dickhead mate. That's the thing. If you don't have any dickhead friends, you're the dickhead.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was worried about for so long.
What happens if you're just like, all of my friends are dickheads?
Well,
are you still a dickhead? Or are you,
well,
are you the
not,
one non-dickhead?
You're just a dickhead by association.
Oh, that Harrison, what's his deal? Oh, he's going around not being a dickhead.
And not knowing who his friends are. It's not even like a paranoid thing. I just don't know, like, I know now, but I just didn't know, like, what qualities of a good friend are.
I feel like knowing who the person is like, step one.
Thank you so much for being on this podcast, Tom Lang, and
hey, it's my friend.
It's a no. It's it's mutual friends. This is the Mutual Friends podcast where we just talk about people that we know and may have not met properly before. But yeah, no, it's. I'm really glad that you came on the podcast. It's really great.
Oh, left-handed handshake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful. Thanks so much for having me, Harrison.
It's been so great.
Thanks so much for having me, Han. It's been a blast.
Oh, I totally forgot about that for a second.
Yeah. Never forget it now.
It's great. I've been Han Engstrom. Oh, it feels so great saying
that's
it.
Good.
Oh, it's too bad I already registered for Raw Comedy under my real name.
I guess I just change it on the night. Just go up to whoever's emceeing like, when they're off stage and be like, hey, can you just call me Han?
Han, yeah, that'd be great. But here's the thing is, I have to throw out my opening joke, though.
Oh, yeah. It's not that great.
Oh, okay.
No, I mean, it's fine, but you can write another one.
That's fine. It's my safety net, anyway. Yeah.
I mean, you can also just be like, hey, I'm Han. My full name is short for Harrison.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, I didn't even think of that. Okay, yeah. That's fine. Yeah, that's easy.
Indeed, it would be his comedy tip. If something's weird...
yeah.
Say something.
Wait, if something's what?
If something's weird...
Oh, yeah.
Say something. Because the audience wants you to say something.
Yeah. Right?
So if you've got a weird name...
Yes.
Say it.
Okay, cool.
Just be like, hey, yeah, my name's Han, short for Harrison. Oh, what's up with that? Right? And there's a
whole
thing
about, what's up with that.
Don't
never
say
what's up with that.
But give the vibe. Tell them what's up
exactly,
with that.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It comes through in delivery.
Just, it doesn't, you don't even need to make a big deal about it.
No.
But just, and you, oh, honestly, if you don't mention it, it's not a bad thing.
No.
You know, if you've got, you know, like, I don't know. I'm just falling apart.
You're on a roll, man. But do see Tom this Saturday. It's tomorrow. You can get your tickets now.
December 6th.
December 6th, 2014.
Because, otherwise, every time we just say, it's tomorrow, there's people who's listening to it. Is it? Showing up at the Butterfly Club every day.
Yeah.
Is it now?
Is it? Well, I feel like we give enough details so people can look it up online. Yeah, you hope people look it up online.
It's the 6th of December, and there'll be more details and a link in the notes.
Yeah, no, I'm going to put up a thing like tomorrow about like
bookkeeping,
you.
The podcast.
Exactly. Fuck. next week we're going to talk about scrapbooking and the way that you can order them alphabetically or chronologically and what the difference is. Thank you so much. Very good friend, very wonderful comedian, Tom McLean. Oh,
thank you
so much for being on the show. It's so good to nerd out with you. As per usual, we don't have any outro music, so we're just going to make weird noises while we close things out.
La, 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 la.